Marcus Sahaba, the voice of Ahl Sunnah wal Jamaah.
There he is, the man with the big snook. Hey, I tell you what, a huge, massive snook, Adam Carter. But before we get him to describe his snook for the Jummah lunchtime table, let's welcome Adam Camara with a hearty Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. And tell me, how are you doing this, cloudy, rainy, windy morning in Durban, Adam?
Wa alaikum salam, Shafad. Yes, thanks for that lovely introduction. It's a lovely, cool morning on the Durban beachfront, Shafad. Lots of activity. There's probably about 50 kayaks setting up on the beach in front of me. And looks like they are getting ready to have some sort of event, maybe a kayak race or some sporting event. On the right of them, Shafad, is about 30 surfers in the water as well. So lots of physical activity going on the beachfront. And I believe there's a big marathon being today as well. So perfect weather for it, Shafad. Lovely cool day after yesterday's scorching heat. The sky is overcast. It rained a bit in the morning. Everything's wet, but it stopped now. And the wind is up. I can see seahorses out at sea, so that's why I'm landbound today, Shafad.
Well, you're landbound purposely because, divine decree says, Adam, you have to be on your favorite slot, fishing with Adam on Marcus Sahaba, the voice of the Ahl Sunnah wal Jama'ah, where millions of people literally tune in to listen to what's happening in Durban and what's happening on the fishing front. But Adam, this beautiful picture where you're looking so content with that fish, fresh and lovely. Take it, just tell us how you caught it, how you landed it, and describe that fish in your, in your astute language, Adam. Bismillah.
Yes, Shafad, I think your duas are very powerful because the weather was perfect on Friday and the forecast is perfect for Monday morning. So the weekend is blown out, and I think you wanted to have me on air, so your duas kept me off the water, Shafad. But it's always a pleasure to be on air, and I'm always available for you. As you know, the last show we did, I was already in the harbor, and you gave me a call, and my friend Carl Cook at Springer while we were on air, and that was quite a moment on air as well, Shafad. Yes, coming to the Natal Snook, there have been some Natal snook coming out on our KZN waters in the recent weeks. And I've really been trying hard or making some efforts to get Natal snook. We've been going out mostly to number one and trying for bonnies. And in between them, you pick up game fish. But the last few trips, we went out to the South Pier. That's just outside the harbor to the right. Fishing not very deep water because the snook usually congregate in areas where there's like when the tide is flowing out of the harbor and it's taking out a whole shoal of bait fish and the snook feed there. And that's where we were fishing, Shafad. And I've been introduced to a new facet of fishing called slow pitch jigging. So I was busy using my slow pitch outfit, and it was such a thrill to get a hookup on the slow jig rod and reel set up with 10-pound boss braid. And it turned out to be a 5.5-kilo fish. So a really nice prize way to start the season. And on that same morning, on Friday morning, Skulk and Mohammed fished on another boat, and they each got one good fish as well. Later in the session, we found a shoal of smaller Natal snook that were actually jumping and feeding on spats, but they were not taking any bait. So there were about 5 or 6 boats around them, and none of them had hookups. And snook is known to bite at first light. So mine was the first fish on the boat at about 6 a.m. Skulk and Mohammed picked theirs up around that same time. So snook are known to come on the bite very voraciously and then suddenly go off the bite. And we've really experienced that quite well on Friday morning, Shafad.
Talk about come on the bite very voraciously, and the one point you made that they wouldn't take bait if they're feeding. If fish are full, they wouldn't go for any bait, Adam?
No, Shafad, we found that if there's abundance of bait fish in the water, they will continue to eat. Most of the bonitos that we catch, once we put them into the hatch, you see them actually spitting out what they were eating, and we often see sprats and little baby squids, and you can actually see what they were feeding on. And that's a technique fishermen use as well. Once they know exactly what the fish are feeding on, then they use a lure that mimics that fish, whether it's a tiny squid or a sprat or any kind of bait fish. you try and imitate the size and the color of that baitfish and cast that into the shoal, and hopefully you'll get a pickup. So, you know, it's not a matter of the fish being hungry or full. We don't know exactly what triggers the snook, but sometimes people say there's so many you can walk on, you know, it's as if you can walk on them. It's so full up. But you can throw anything at them and they wouldn't bite. But there'll be just maybe a change in atmospheric pressure or change in wind direction, and suddenly they all are hungry and they all want to eat. Then you can throw any lure at them and you can hook them up, Shabbat.
Now, Adam, you know the old adage, the early bird catches the worm. But is it true that the early fisherman catches the best fish?
For sure, Shafat. You know, if you think about it, all creatures, animal or human, you know, you slow down as night falls, you have a sleep, and then you wake up in the morning hungry, looking for breakfast. So in the animal world, it's the same. In the fish world, it's the same. They all rest at night when it's dark, and then just as the sun comes up or as we get daybreak, then the predators will actually start looking for those shoals of little bait fish that are still a little sleepy and easier to catch up at. So we often find with Natal snook is that you get the bite at daybreak. So you got to actually leave before sunrise and, you know, make the effort to get your boat ready, get all your tackle on board, make your way out to the spot, set yourself up and start fishing before daybreak, so you are really in position to take advantage of the snook bite, Shabbat.
Adam, you know, spiritually, it is that early morning, the early hours of the morning that you get your best high-octane spirituality. The same with the human beings. You know, physically, they become more stronger when they keep in sync with how, you know, Mother Nature wants us to obey its laws. So those that get up early morning and, you know, they go out and take in the fresh air, physically, they are ship-shape, Adam?
Yes, Shafat. You know, there's a lot of barca in your day if you start early. You may feel a little groggy when you get up, but sometimes when you enjoy a longer sleep, you actually feel more sleepy. You know, you can't get that sleep out of your eyes for the rest of the day. But if you get into the habit of getting up early, you can do so much more in the day. And as I said, for fishermen, it's really a bonus because you can catch your fish really early, come back to shore and still enjoy a full day at workshop art. And that's why I've been able to fish so often lately. I've got into the habit of fishing for about 2 or 3 hours early in the morning and then getting to work at about 8:30, 9 o'clock, Shabbat.
Now, Adam, I'm looking at a message here. It says, Assalamu alaikum, Adam Kamda. You and Shafat definitely resonate brilliantly on radio. Jazakallah khairah for giving us your slot. We enjoy you with the whole family, having lekker coffee with the rusk. Please, Adam, I want to know the difference between a ski boat and a boat. Adam, I never thought of a question like that. How do you answer that?
Yes, Shafar, the ski boat that we talk about, I think it's really popular in South Africa and not so much the rest of the world because our coastline does not have so many marinas, you know, like every few miles you find a marina. For example, if you have to launch through Durban, the next port or marina or estuary that you can enter with a vessel on the north is Richards Bay. And if you go south, it's probably PE. So it's a really long distance between, you know, sheltered waters. So we've designed a ski boat that we can use to launch from any beach. And it's used to go through the waves, Shafat. So this is for a lot of foreign countries, they consider this to be a really extreme sport. And they find South African skippers to be really daring and adventurous, Shafat. But I think it was out of necessity that they've designed the ski boat, which can handle these big waves and can go through the surf shapard. And a boat would be every other type of vessel that's on the water shapard.
I remember Kanna and all these people. You know what I'm talking about? Kanna, Lenny's uncle and grandfathers and all. They used to, Rivermouth, they used to come with a rowing boat. And they used to fight the tide, I don't know, the breakers and all, but how they managed to maneuver with just like paddle skis and with their boat, go out and catch a fish, Adam. Those were many, many years ago. I don't know if you recall the Indian fishermen with their paddle boats going out and catching fish, Adam.
Yes, Shafat, if you think back of the earlier days when people used to launch at the Durban Ski Boat Club or here at Ushaka Beach, as it's known now, you'll remember a type of vessel called the crocker ski, which looks like a oversized paddle ski, and it could take two fishermen on board, and they both have paddles, and they'll actually paddle that boat out. So the Shaka area is pretty well sheltered. So at some although it is exposed to the swell with the northeasterly, but when the conditions are right, it's fairly okay to paddle out. And that type of ski people would use at other lawn sites, as you mentioned, is the Pingo Beach. But you'd wait for the right conditions. You're not going to go out in like really big swells and a strong southwesterly. You'd wait for the ideal conditions. And even on the ideal day, you'll get a sit and then you get a huge wave coming through, which can wipe you out. So it still takes a lot of talent and skill to time the waves and lots of muscle to be able to paddle those vessels out, with the right timing so that you get out through the sit and get to the backline before the next big sit comes through, Shafat.
Alhamdulillah, looking at another question here. It's from Ashraf from Kauteng. He says, Assalamu alaikum. Listening to the show this morning. Great indeed. I was talking to my cousin from Durbs, and he says, oh, the fishing is not so good. But it seems the fishing is good when Adam comes on board.
No, I didn't get the question, Shafat. But before you go on, it reminds me of bonny fishing when we cast our line out, we get a bite, we're on, and then it lets go, and then we're on again, and it lets go. It's just like you had me on the line, you let me go. And we're on again. So, yeah, go ahead. What is the question, Shafat?
Okay, I'll paraphrase it. Ashraf says he was talking to his cousin here in Durban, and his cousin tells him the fishing is not so good. But he says when he's listening to us, fishing sounds like he's booming here. I said, maybe you got the baraka, Adam. But his cousin is giving wrong signals. Your thoughts?
Yes, Shafat, everyone experiences fishing completely differently. And from my experience in the last 2 months of fishing, the ocean is so alive with fish. We are seeing shoals of sprats rising. We're seeing flocks of birds coming and feeding on them. We've experienced thousands of bonitos at number one. We're seeing dolphins. We're seeing turtles. Whenever we hook a big fish, there's lots of sharks around. So we're seeing lots of action and lots of life in the sea, Shafat. But I understand fully what the listener is talking about, because on social media last night, I was reading through one angler complaining that he's been fishing for the last 6 months and hasn't really caught a decent fish, just catching a few blacktails and tobies and, wanting some advice. And, fishing is a learning experience, Shafat. It's so important to gather information, current information from other anglers. And our social media sites, lends itself well to this kind of sharing of information. One site I'd like to recommend is Fishing Durban on Facebook, Shafat. Veer often posts current catches and what bait they're using and where they're fishing. So if you use all this information, Shafat, and fish according to the season. Like at the moment, it's snook season, so that's why we are targeting snook. When the snook go off the bite, the kuta will come on the bite, and then you target kuta. So by gathering all this knowledge and intelligence over the fish species, how they feed, where they feed, what bait they would eat, you can stack the favor, the odds in your favor, Shafat. So we are really enjoying a phenomenal run, and we're anticipating a really good snook run in the days ahead. And talking about, actually defining the season, my first snook for the season was on the 10th of March. And I saw Lionel and Mohammed also land the snook on that same day. And then when I got back home, a memory came up on Facebook showing 7 years ago on the 10th of March, my friend Novi caught a snook on my boat. So I'm officially declaring 10th of March as the start of snook season. And inshallah, next year we'll observe that and see if the season can start on the 10th of March again, Shafat.
Absolutely. You are adding positivity to the fishing circles. And this is a message from Dawood. He says, Adam Kamda, what about those people that go on small boats and catch fish that is double size of the boat? That's a good question, Adam.
Yes, Shafat. Coming back to social media, if you watch all the photos that are published, there's an entire facet of fishing called kayak fishing. And these guys paddle out. It's a small vessel. They have to paddle out through the surf, and they often produce the biggest fish. Sometimes even outfishing the ski boat. The ski boat has the advantage of motors, where you could motor up and down deeper water, shallower water, go wherever your heart desires. But the fishing ski is limited to how far you can paddle Shafar, and often you wouldn't paddle too far from your launching site because at the end of the day, you have to paddle back again. But there are some, you know, if you really analyze it, sometimes they might have an advantage over the ski boat because they don't have the noise of the engine. They can hug closer to the back line if the snook are feeding right on the back line where the waves are breaking. The bigger ski boat would not venture there because they could easily get caught with a rogue wave and be capsized. The paddle ski, if they end up with, you know, with a big wave approaching them, they can just turn into the wave and easily paddle through it. So, you know, they are, you know, it gives them that stealth mode, Shafar, you know, where there's no noise in the water at all from the motors. So, reflecting on that question that, you know, you'd find these guys catching really huge fish. And I really have a lot of respect for these anglers, Shafar, for putting themselves, you know, against the ocean and also some of these big monsters of the sea. And often they hook big game fish, and those game fish are eaten by sharks as well, Shafar. So, and these guys are really close to the water. It's so easy for them to tip over. So they really are brave fishermen and really diehard fishermen, Shafar.
Yeah, JazakAllah for that, Adam. And what about the person that, you know, dives, spearfishing? How successful are they? Because it seems as if they are a dying breed in the... And I used to see them every week on, you know, Sepingo Beach, Tiger Rocks and all. They still love coming and doing diving. You could see the, you know, the like a yellow ball, and you say, oh, there's a, you know, a diver looking for fish or spear fishing and so forth. How's that? Is it a sport that's still being, you know, enjoyed by many?
Yes, Shafad, pre-diving and spearfishing is still very much alive. There are two big spearfishing shops dedicated to spearfishing equipment in Durban itself. But it takes a lot more skill. You know, you need to have good swimming skills, good breath hold skills. You need a lot of discipline when you take a deep breath and dive down to the bottom of the ocean to know your limits, not to be chasing the fish at the bottom or waiting at the reef, you know, waiting for the fish to come closer and closer within shot. You need to know your limits so that, you know, if you are running out of air, then you got to come back to the surface and start again, take a deep breath, go down, relax, and wait for the fish to come to you. So it really is quite an art. It's actually a more sustainable way of fishing than rod and reel fishing, Shafar, because when you're down there, you can actually choose which fish you want to shoot. You don't get a lot of bycatch, you know, like with bait angling, you would basically get whatever is below you, whatever is on the reef. So often you would hook protected species, like if you're fishing with bait, you could hook a natural wrasse or a 74, which you need to, release to the water. So if you're spear fishing, you can identify the fish and see, okay, that's a protected species, I'm not going to touch it. Or that's a species that grows quickly and can replenish itself quickly. So, you know, we can exploit that. So it's a very sustainable way of fishing, Shafar, but it takes a lot of skill to really get into it seriously.
Well, some of the opinion that, you know, spear fishing is a very cruel way of catching fish because you're piercing its body. What's your take on that, Adam?
Yes, Shafar, as I mentioned, it seems cruel, but it's the more sustainable way because you're not catching a fish blind. You're actually choosing which fish. And if you think about it, we are harvesting the fish for food on the table. So whichever way it's killed, the fish is killed. And usually when they spear the fish, they pull it, the spear is attached with a line to the gun, and then they actually pull the fish in, they swim towards the fish to bring it to the surface, and they dispatch it with a knife in the head, Shafar. It sounds quite gruesome, but it's a quick way to end the fish's life and end its suffering. And also, if you have a wriggling fish on your float, it's a dinner bell for the sharks, Shafar. So spear fishermen don't want the fish to be struggling and wriggling, you know, underwater. It gives off all those vibrations and blood in the water and attracts sharks, which they don't want, Shafar.
Yaqut says, Assalamu alaikum, Adam Kamda, you are simply the best. I really enjoy your segment with the Brew Chef. Please, Adam, tell me, why do you fishermen still fish when there's so many sharks around?
Yes, Shafar, you know, the sharks are such an annoyance. As I said, I rediscovered the number one grounds off Durban, and we're having so much of fun, even just catching little bonnies, but in between we get the big game fish. And most often we are fishing light tackle. When we hook the game fish, we fight it for a few minutes and then the sharks come and say, you know what, that's mine. I'm having my breakfast from your catch. So it is a big problem, Shafat. But we are trying to outwit them. So, you know, we're experimenting with techniques of hooking the fish and then letting them free spool, letting them swim away from the reef and following them with the boat and then fishing and then reeling them in, you know, away from the sharks. So it's always a challenge. The ocean always, you know, throws you a curveball. And I think that's what attracts fishermen to the ocean. You know, it's a thinking process. It's not just a mechanical thing of throwing a lure in the water and you're on immediately. You know, you're always trying to think and trying to figure out how to get to the fish and how to win at this game, Shafat.
This question here says, Assalamu alaikum. My name is Chacha in Chatsworth. I love Adam Canberra. I visit his shop quite often. I want to know from Adam, is a shad still in the waters now? Adam?
Yes, Shafa. There are plenty shad around, but I haven't seen many big catches posted lately. So I think the guys would be, if you're targeting shad, there's a spot in Amanzin Toti called Shad Place, and then further down in Port Shepstone area is High Rock. Those would be popular spots to try for shad. And you could either cast a spoon out and spoon for shad, or cast a fillet on a shad trace out for them, Shafat.
Question from Yakut. He says, Assalamu alaikum. Adam, why is Inanda and Albert Falls not so so frequented like before? Because I believe you can go catch a lot of freshwater fish there. How do you respond to Yakut there?
Yes, Shafat, those dams are still open to fishing. My good friend Willem Rieder fishes them quite often and often posts lots of pictures of fantastic bass he's caught. And he's very free with his information and shares, you know, the baits that he's using, the techniques that he's using. So if you want to know more about those dams, I'd recommend following him on his YouTube channel called WR Fishing. He's a very versatile angler, loves freshwater fishing and loves saltwater fishing as well. He's fairly new to saltwater, and he's been on my boat quite often. And I'm so proud to say that he's caught lots of firsts on my boat. He's got his first dorado on my boat, first kuta on my boat, and recently got his first Natal snook on my boat as well, Shafat.
Yes, assalamu alaikum, Adam. The problem with dam fishing is the weed has become a nuisance. The municipalities are not doing their work. It seems we must do everything. Adam, how do you respond to Yunus?
Yes, Shafat, that's a very sad situation where, you know, if you leave the hyacinth to grow uncontrolled, it becomes a bigger and bigger problem. And in many dams, like the Hartebeespoort Dam, if you look out, you know, from a high vantage point, it looks like the entire dam is carpeted with the green carpet, Shafat. And, you know, as I said, if it's controlled from the early stages, it's easy to manage. But once it gets beyond a certain point, it's like at the point of no return. So it really is a huge challenge for the authorities controlling all our water bodies, and I hope they don't let Albert Falls and Inanda get worse than what it is, because many of the other dams are really, you know, it's really beyond, and it's a microcosm of many of the government departments of art where there's inadequate skills and apathy and, you know, lack of interest. And it's usually trying grappling at the problem when it's too late rather than understanding the environment, understanding the situation, and knowing what maintenance is meant to be done. It's similar to Eskom, Shafat. You know, we all have to grapple with load shedding now, but why should it have come to such an advanced stage? They should have started sorting the problems out like when it was 10% of the problem, not 100% of the problem, Shafat.
No, absolutely, Adam. Spot on there. Gigi Foy saying, Adam, recipe. Okay, Gigi Foy. Adam's got a lovely recipe for you. Masala fried snook. Adam, we all ears. Go for it.
Yes, Shafat, this recipe will give you a lovely fried fish dish similar to what you'd get in a restaurant, full of flavor and with a crispy coating. So you start with a half a kg of snook fillets. Take it in a shallow baking dish and season this with the following spices: 1 teaspoon of salt, 2.5 tablespoons lemon juice, 1 tablespoon crushed dhania seeds, 2 teaspoons crushed jeera seeds, 1 teaspoon carom seed, which is adwan, 1/2 teaspoon black pepper powder, 1/2 teaspoon turmeric powder, 1 1/2 teaspoons chili powder, 1 tablespoon red chili flakes, 1 teaspoon dried methi leaves, and 1 1/2 tablespoons of garlic ginger paste. As you can see, there's lots of spices ingredients in chapat, and that will come together to make a really delicious dish. Combine it all well, coat the fish pieces well on both sides, let it marinate. You can refrigerate for 4 to 6 hours, or for best results, leave it overnight. And then for the batter, you'd add 1/3 cup of gram flour to a bowl, a pinch of yellow food coloring, which is optional, 4 to 5 tablespoons of water. Mix to a thick paste, pour over the fish and coat evenly, do both sides. Fry in medium oil, turn after 4 minutes, cook till golden brown, rest it on a dripping rack, and serve with a squeeze of fresh lemon chapat.
Adam, come, let's have it for breakfast. Powerful, powerful indeed. And I can hear one brother saying, hey, but Adam, I want to have it with white bread and butter. Can you do that, Adam?
I'll give you a shortcut, chapat. If you want to have this with lovely hot chips, buy chips from your local chicken tikka place and refry it in an air fryer, chapat, and sprinkle some of your favorite chips sprinkle on that. And you can have that with this fish. You can have a lovely fish and chips dish, chapat. It's a nice shortcut.
Yeah, brilliant, brilliant indeed, Adam. And you got the appetite all jumping, the taste buds are saying, give me more. Adam, you have a brilliant chat with you this morning. Your parting words before we let you go?
Yes, Shafat, I'd just like to warn all the traffic road users, just be aware of all the road closures today from that marathon that's being run. And aside from that, wish you a lovely Sunday, a nice cool weather, and see you again next week Sunday, Shafat.
Inshallah, Adam, you have a great day ahead as usual. Embrace it, celebrate it, and take it into wherever you go, Adam. You are a very fresh human being indeed. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Salaams to you and the listeners.
Yes, our Adam Kamdar there, keeping us up to speed on what's happening in the Indian Ocean.
Marcus Sahaba, the voice of Ahl Sunnah wal Jamaah.